Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today I am joined by Matt Corey of BP Boston. Matt, what's up?
Oh, man. My legs hurt from running. Other than that, and I'm terrified of the NHL playoffs. Those are the two things right now. How are you doing, man?
I am well. Not terrified by the NHL playoffs. I'm curious as to why you are, though.
Capitals fan.
Okay, that's enough said. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yep. We'll lose terribly. And yeah. One of these days, right? No, probably not.
No.
you've been watching since pre-Peter Bondra days, I'm sure, and it just never gets better.
Well, the regular season is usually wonderful.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is certainly not the issue.
No, you're right. It's not the issue. Yeah, in many ways, it actually is a little bit like it can't be in many ways a little bit like, but forgive my my word choice. In any case, it is like the pre-04 Red Sox in a number of ways. Not certainly that long,
right?
But a good amount of pain is packed into that period of time.
yeah, I think that's a decent analogy. I think maybe the Texas Rangers would be a good one.
Oh yeah, that's true. Although the Capitals have never actually won a Stanley Cup Finals game. So there is that.
But after all, this is a baseball podcast, so we will pivot true. Here.
Let's move on.
So we've got six games in the books right now with the Red Sox. They sit at a nice little tidy 3-3. You know, we'd obviously like it to be 6-0, but you know, you can't win them all. But 3-3, considering the flu bug that has been going around with this team, might be somewhat of a miracle. You know, I just want to put in perspective here a little bit how many guys have been missing time with the flu this year so far, and or the flu and or other things. So Bogaerts has missed four straight games with the being on the bereavement list. We have Elias, who's missed time with the ab strain. Joe Kelly down with the flu. He's missed three games. Pomerantz has not started this year because of arm troubles. Price hasn't started this year because of arm troubles. Hanley has missed four straight games with the flu. Robbie Ross has not played this year because of the flu.
Jake, we only have an hour for this podcast, so
yeah, and I'm not even done. We haven't even gotten to Rutledge, Carson Smith, or Tyler Thornburg, who are all injured as well. We had Benintendi practically yakking in the field and still playing games. Mitch Moreland playing games at much less than 100%. And now today we have Jackie Bradley Jr. going on the DL with a knee injury.
After missing two games.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible the amount of things that have happened to this team in just six games. And to be 3-3, like, I'm proud of that right now.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with being 3-3 given the list that you – and on top of that, I mean, they faced some pretty impressive pitching. So, you know, you have to think at some point the flu bug is going to work its way through and go on to – you know, other things, and you know, the team will get healthy, and you know, at least from that. So yeah, I'm optimistic that you know, that the injury bug will lessen.
They did fumigate the clubhouse too.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, the one thing you didn't mention, which, you know, isn't specific to the Red Sox on the field, but I mean, even Dave O'Brien, the team's play-by-play guy on the on television, had to leave mid-broadcast because he was vomitously ill.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, I mean, good God. In any case,
do you really think it's the flu? Do you think it's like neurovirus or something crazy like that? I mean, it's it seems kind of bizarre. I know that the clubhouses are not clean places, but I mean, still.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you do. I mean, the bizarre thing to me is that this doesn't happen more often. I mean, I have two kids, and every year when school starts, you know, illness gets you know, just pass from one kid to eight other kids, and from those eight kids to eight other kids from each kid, you know, and it's just this exponential thing till half the school is sick and half the parents of those kids are sick, and it just goes on and on. So, you know, people who spend a lot of time in close proximity to each other tend to share illnesses. So, but this is easily the worst that I have heard, and I don't have a comprehensive knowledge of baseball team illness, but it's certainly one of the worst I would imagine, you know, in a while.
I think we should start referring to the 2017 season from now on as the flu epidemic season, just to remember it that way. I think, you know, a week in change here is enough to remember it that way. What do you think? Do you think we can make that happen?
Sure. Why not? Hashtag it.
Hashtag flu epidemic Red Sox 2017. We'll have to work on shortening that up a little bit.
Cut that down a little bit, but yes.
So I want to play a little bit of I want to have some fun, I should say, with some early season numbers here. Okay. And so far, when you look at run differential, which is a pretty good indicator of how good a team is towards the end of the year, at least, you know, that can tell you some things. How many runs has a team scored? How many have they been able to prevent with their pitching? And right now, the Red Sox Pythagorean record has them at 3-3 because they have scored 22 runs and they have let up 20 runs. Let's go with the good news first. They have let up 20 runs, which is the fourth fewest in the American League right now. That's pretty good. The pitching's been pretty good. The first, turn in a quarter through the rotation here. But I want to get your guess at – and that puts them at +2. But I want to get your guess as to who has the best run differential in the American League right now and what that run differential is.
Well, last I looked, and this does not include yesterday's games, but I believe the Twins had the best run differential.
You are correct, sir.
It given up like four runs or something. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yes. Can you guess their run differential for bonus points?
+25.
Ooh, that's aggressive. Not quite +25, but they do sit at a major league second best, I should say. There's only one team that's got a better one. +16 right now. They've scored 31 runs and allowed just 15. So that in itself should tell you how irrelevant one week of baseball statistics really is. And I think it's always funny when you listen to talk shows or anything like that, and you know, I'll call out the radio talking heads for this, but you know, they start talking about things like, Benintendi, he doesn't look very good right now. He's batting like, you know, 174 or whatever. Yeah, it's 174 on the year so far. You know, is this reminiscent of Pedroia's rookie year or Pablo Sandoval? He's batting 130. Is he done? And then on the flip side, it's, is Sandy Leon the greatest catcher to ever live, batting 368 right now? It's just like, whoa. Well,
yes. The answer to that is yes.
Yeah, but like, calm down. You know, it's so ridiculous because our tendency is to way overreact to what happens when it's all we have as a sample size. But if someone went on a cold streak, like if Benintendi had batted 298 all the way up through the All-Star break, and then for 2 weeks he batted like 067, no one would give a shit. You know? And like, this is 7 days and everybody's like, calling for, you know, the sky is falling here. It's hilarious. It's just completely arbitrary. This is what we have, so let's panic about it. That's the glory of early season stats.
Oh yeah, this is you know, one of the great traditions in baseball. You know, to look at you know, what teams do in the first. I mean, it goes on. You know, the first 2 months of baseball, you know, you're still going to have, you know, a month and a half in, there's going to be someone hitting 380 or 400 or something crazy like that. And we're all going to be like, you know, oh, can, you know, Brandon Belt be the first 400 hitter since Ted Williams? So I think that's just part of the fun of baseball season is overreacting and, you know, and jumping around about stuff like that. I mean, it can be hard to, you know, coming off of football season and hockey and basketball playoffs and, you know, where the games are all do or die, seemingly, to baseball, where the games are, they're very, very opposite almost of do or die. You know, you obviously you want to win every game, but that's not the way baseball works. You're going to lose a lot of games, and even the best teams will lose a ridiculous amount of games. And many times they will lose a bunch of games in a row and look terrible in that process. So, yeah, we really know very little about the team, other than, you know, what you said in the beginning, which I totally subscribe to, which is, you know, a 3-3 record, given what what has happened to the roster so far. I mean, through only six games, I think that's darn impressive. So, well, you know, next time you and I talk in whatever it is, 3 weeks or 4 weeks or something, you know, we'll have a lot more data to work with, and we can blow that out of the water too.
Yes, I look forward to that. I look forward to overanalyzing things at that later date. But let's talk a little bit about the offense as a whole here. And this is, you know, let's not base it off of what we've seen early season so far. But I mean, I guess, what are your impressions of this lineup here? Seeing it, although in a very incomplete format, without David Ortiz, does this unit still give you confidence that, you know, through the dog days of summer, all the way through the remainder of the year, that these guys are going to be able to hang with the best offenses in the league? Or is this a unit that you think has some real question marks in it?
Well, I think the answer is both. I talked to the guys at BP Toronto on their podcast, previewing the Red Sox season, and you know, we were, you know, they were asking me, you know, what I thought the Red Sox were going to do, and I think that this is an incredible team that could win 100 games. And I said the thing that's going to, you know, that may derail them is injuries, you know. And at the time, David Price had just gotten hurt, and you know, you're always worried about you know, guy who's pitching tonight.
Pomerantz.
Thank you. You know, Pomerantz is, you know, perpetually walking on a high wire of injuries. If I can butcher the language in that way. So, but you know, I think if this team is healthy, I think they're an incredibly good team. And for the most part, you know, they're a team that hasn't, I mean, certainly last year they were very healthy, which should bode well for this year. You don't ever expect perfect health again, and the Red Sox were pretty close to perfect health last year. So you would expect some injuries that that didn't happen last year, and certainly we've seen that already this year. But you know, the biggest predictor of injury of future injuries is past injuries, and a team that doesn't go through many injuries, you wouldn't expect to go through a ridiculous number of injuries the following season. And I think that's really about the only thing that could derail this team. I mean, they're an incredibly talented, especially offensively speaking, team. You know, they've got a lot of young guys who are improving and reaching that those sort of, you know, peak offensive seasons in the mid-20s. Yeah, so to answer your question, I'm very optimistic about them offensively. You know, we have yet to see a full lineup for the Red Sox. I think maybe we caught one or two at the very end of spring training, but certainly not during the regular season. So I'm very optimistic. I do think that, you know, there are some holes. Despite how you know, Sandy Leon has looked, it's six games, and I don't think you can really learn a tremendous amount over six games. So I do still think that it's likely Leon is not the long-term starter here, and to get him out is probably going to mean prolonged offensive ineptitude. And you know, the depth behind a lot of the players is being and will be tested because of you know, some increase in injuries. But you know, the major nine starters, even with Mitch Moreland, I'm still pretty optimistic that that's a top five offense, if not better.
So let me ask you about Sandy Leon then, because you bring up an interesting point, and I think that it's fair to argue that there may have been some real change with Sandy Leon last year, and I think that numbers haven't necessarily backed that up in terms of the underlying stats there, and certainly projection systems didn't like him a whole lot coming into this year, but they also take into account what he did before last year as well. He didn't have an incredibly impressive spring, which I don't really care about.
It was a pretty bad spring. He looked pretty bad.
Yeah, he did look pretty bad. He did have a decent last few games of the spring, but yeah, by and large, he was not successful. But then he came out gangbusters here in the first week or so. Do you think that it's fair to say that he has made real gains at this point? Or it sounds like you're pretty skeptical that there is any real change that has gone on here, and that this may just be another one of his hot weeks. But I don't know, at this point, like, we're getting to a point where the sample size is large enough dating back to last year that it's getting tough to fake this change.
Well, Jake, we've got 19 plate appearances here.
Sure, this season, but yep, like, dating right back to last year.
Yeah, right. I mean, at the end of last year was not great. In the playoffs, that was, again, a very pretty small sample, so it's hard to hold a tremendous amount against him there. He's a great story, and I especially enjoy watching him defensively. This season so far, he's looked, I think, even better defensively than he has than he did last season. I mean, his throws are incredible.
His arm is so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the I'm not a pitch framing expert, but just watching him, he looks really smooth behind the plate. So I'm, if he's going to hit, I mean, that's wonderful. But I think, he may be worth having in the lineup just for defensive purposes. And I think that's, one of the things the Red Sox love about him is that, he's hitting, but, he's not, it's not like he's a zero if he's not hitting. He's providing, value to the team in other ways for sure. I'm not placing a whole lot of value on 19 plate appearances up to now. Let's talk about it in a month. I mean, if he's hitting, 368 on whatever it is, May 11th, a month from now, then I'll officially be impressed.
Yeah, I think it is worth noting, though, that there are some things in his profile that suggest that there has been something different going on with him. I mean, last year, they're not exceptional numbers. I won't pretend that they are, but his hard contact rate last year was 31.3%. And in 2015, it was just 14.1%. And then this year, in a minuscule sample size, it's up to 43.8%. So, I think the real thing to notice there is that there was a significant jump from the limited playing time he had in 2015 to 2016. And I think 31.3% is like a pretty decent mark there. So it's possible that there has been some change.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how predictive that change is.
Right.
Or how predictive those numbers are. I think over a long period of time, the more the larger sample you have, the more predictive I would imagine them to be. So there's that. And yeah, I mean, he's definitely barreling up pitches. You can see it as well as anybody in the lineup right now, maybe better. So
yeah, and to put that in perspective a little bit, his hard contact rate last year would have rated him sixth in all of baseball behind Buster Posey, Wilson Ramos, Jonathan Lucroy, Salvador Perez, and Russell Martin. So that's some pretty good offensive company if you're a catcher.
Yeah, and I think, it's not uncommon for – analysts have been looking at Leon and going, oh, well, he fell off at the end of the year, in which he definitely did. But it's not entirely uncommon for a catcher who, with a high workload, especially maybe a higher workload than he's ever had before, to sort of fall apart at the end of the year. I mean, I think that's probably to be expected. It would be unusual if that didn't happen. But you look at things like his BABIP, which was pretty ridiculous. I mean, I don't think that he's as good a hitter as he showed last year, but I'm open to the idea that, you know, that he could be a league average hitter, you know, from the catcher position, which from the catcher position, as you just sort of pointed out, is, you know, is above average.
Right.
That makes sense. Above average for catchers. So that would be a big plus for the Red Sox for sure, especially considering, you know, what they did to get him. And I mean, this is sort of found money at this point. You know, a number of years ago, we were, you know, looking at the Red Sox system and going, oh, they have, you know, Vasquez and Swihart coming up, and that's, you know, we're going to be set there. And for various reasons, those two things haven't really, you know, those two players haven't really taken hold. And Leon has been, you know, sort of a stopgap, but maybe he's the, you know, we'll find out, you know, maybe he's the better player. It's going to be, I needed to see a lot more. I need to see a lot more from him to make that pronouncement, but, you know, he's been pretty good so far.
And I think that one interesting point there is that, you know, we'll see how this whole thing shakes out, but if it turns out that Leon is a changed player and he is, someone that the Red Sox want to keep around in a starting position for a while, being that he's only a year older than Christian Vasquez, which a lot of people lose sight of as well, that could open up the Red Sox if they were to need something at the deadline to trade one of those catchers, whether it be Blake Swihart or Christian Vasquez there. And those guys would be pretty valuable in a trade. Either of them would be. And, you know, I hate to think of Dombrowski trading any more players, but at this point, like, he's almost pot committed on this particular group. So if there is somebody who establishes themselves, then maybe he can go in that direction. But I think that we would probably both agree that outside of catcher, the biggest question mark in this offense is Pablo Sandoval at third base. So I wanted to get what your early impressions are from him. And, you know, definitely don't want to look at that batting average at 130 right now, but, like, what have you seen so far watching him?
So I think he looks pretty good. I mean, he looks like Pablo Sandoval. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to swing it at sort of ridiculous pitches out of the zone. The home run that he hit was, you know, up and out of the zone. There was really no business, no reason for him to swing at it, but he barreled it up well enough to get it over the wall, which at the, you know, at that time was pretty huge in that game. They ended up losing by a run anyway, but still that was an impressive swing. And you know, that, like you said, the batting average isn't there, but if you look at his batted ball profile, I mean, he's got pretty impressive numbers through those six games. You know, he's hitting the ball, he's hitting the ball in the air, he's hitting it really hard. He's not popping up at all. He's got a 56.3 hard percentage on Fangraph's batted ball data. His soft hit percentage is 6.3%, which I assume means he has one soft hit at this point. I mean, it's just such a small sample, but, you know, considering who they've faced, you know, I think the results have been really good. I mean, you can't go into this and think, oh, he's going to be an MVP candidate. He's never been an MVP candidate.
That's not Pablo Sandoval at all.
No.
And the fact that he is doing something positive with the bat, even with that home run and the four RBIs there and making hustle plays in the field and getting down the baseline quicker. I mean, all those things are super positive things that we hadn't seen really since he's been in a Red Sox uniform.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think even the defense looks good. I mean,
yeah.
I don't, you know, it's not great.
But it's passable, but, which is more than you've been able to say for him in years.
Yeah, exactly. It's totally passable. You know, I think he had a throwing error the other day. You know, those things are going to happen. Everybody makes throwing errors. Even the immortal Dustin Pedroia makes a throwing error from time to time. And it's, you know, considerably harder throw from third base anyway. But you know, you ask how I'm feeling about Sandoval. I'm actually feeling pretty good. The numbers are not great. He's not going to walk. He's going to strike out. He's going to swing at pitches out of the zone. But if he's able to barrel up the ball the way that he's been doing, I think he's going to have a pretty good season.
I will venture to say that I believe that he will have a season reminiscent of the 2013 Giants season. So not quite as good as he was in 2014, but a pretty good year. And I don't know if he'll get back to quite that batting average, 278, which I think might be a little bit high for him. But I think like we could be looking at a 260 hitter with about 14 home runs given Fenway Park and his swing. And, you know, if he can maintain this weight, I think that's the biggest thing for him. And then all of a sudden you're talking about a Red Sox offense that if Pablo and Sandy Leon are both net positives for this team, that's a very long and powerful lineup.
Yeah, it really is, actually. I mean, it's sort of hard to imagine right now because so many people are out. But, you know, Bogarts is coming back. Betts is coming back. I mean, he's back, but, you know, presumably. I mean, one thing about the flu that we didn't really touch on in our previous conversation about it, but I think is important to note, is that, you know, just because you come back and start playing again or that you can play through it doesn't mean that you're perfectly healthy, that you're, you know, back to full full power potential. I mean, it drains you. It takes weight off your body. It takes a while to, you know, to fully come back from something like that. You know, weeks, I would imagine. So I think we may see, you know, it may be a little bit before a lot of the players that were stricken with that illness, you know, are back to being 100%.
Yeah, and note there about the flu, as we are getting closer to approaching the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One, the flu killed more people in World War One than the war did, the Spanish flu, during that conflict. So the flu's no joke.
No, it is a serious illness. So, but in any case, I am to get back to your point there about the strength of the lineup.
Oh, I thought you meant the Spanish flu.
I think the lineup is going to be pretty deep. You know, we've talked to, you know, for a million hours about David Ortiz and losing him and that kind of thing. Yeah, right. And you know, there isn't that one, maybe that one guy, you know, in the lineup who you want to see up in a clutch situation. But you know, if you're rolling nine guys through your lineup, or, you know, eight, depending on your level of confidence in Mitch Moreland, then
low for me, very low.
Yeah, I mean, I can't claim to be super confident in him either, but, you know, he's hit the ball hard so far, no question about it.
Apparently he owns Justin Verlander too, which is something really odd that I found out yesterday. He's like 10 for 20 something off of Justin Verlander.
Yeah, at one point I think in the game the other day, Verlander had given up three hits. One of them was a single up the middle to Pedroia, and that this was like in its fifth or sixth inning. And the other two were doubles to Moreland.
It's absurd. Like, this is why baseball is absurd. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there was some like schmuck that used to just hit Pedro Martinez, and I can't remember who it was off the top of my head, but he would like consistently hit prime Pedro and had no business doing so. It's just everybody in baseball finds their foil.
It's true. I mean, well, I don't. You probably remember in 2013 during the playoffs. This is my favorite baseball is random sort of story. When Koji was you know, in his prime unhittableness, they were in Tampa during the playoffs, and Koji threw a splitter to whoever their backup catcher was, and the guy, you know, essentially closed his eyes and swung and ended up.
Yes. What was that idiot's name?
I don't know. But it was like the most random occurrence. You know, if you swing, you have X percent chance of actually making, you know, full 100% contact. And this guy, you know, he rolled whatever you roll to have that happen. And and boom, it was like it was a perfect pitch. He was perfectly set up for it. And yet somehow this guy who, you know, didn't have much business in the major leagues, let alone facing Koji in the playoffs, you know, hit one out. So, yeah, these things are going to happen.
Was that Jose Molina?
I don't think it was, but maybe.
Was it Ali Solis?
No, I want to say like Deonor Navarro or something. No, I'm gonna have to.
No, it had to have been Molina.
Was
I
it?
Think it was Molina, because he was so pathetic in the regular season. He had a 178 batting average, and he was 39 years old that season.
Oh yeah.
I think it was him.
All right, I'm looking
it
up.
Maybe it was Kurt Casale. Was it? This is killing me. I don't know why I care so much about this, but I just remembered that thing that you had mentioned so viscerally, and I was like,
Was it Lobatone?
It was Lobatone. Oh my god. That might be even worse.
Yeah.
What has he done since Lobatone? Nothing? Is he in baseball still?
He is. He's with the Nationals.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, actually, he was not horrendous. In fact, that one year was his best year. He played in 100 games. He had a .249 batting average, a .320 on base percentage, and he slugged .394. He hit 7 homers during the regular season.
Okay, that's respectable.
Yeah, it's quite good for a catcher. Quite good. That was the one year, actually. Everything else, every other year, he's been pretty putrid.
All right. Well, I'll be sure to send you a Jose Lobatone fathead for your wall. The gift that keeps giving.
That's right.
All right. Great. So, shall we talk some pitching?
Yeah, sure.
I will not make judgment about the rotation until I have seen everybody through the rotation at least twice. Just as a matter of principle. But I do want to talk about two things. First, Pomerantz is going to start tonight. I have no confidence in him. I want to know what your confidence level in him is for not only this start, but for this year.
I mean, it's hard to have a lot of confidence in him considering – I mean, it's just been bad. Like, you know, they gave up, their best pitching prospect for him, in a deal that immediately looked, gut-wrenchingly bad. Even if he pitched well, you would still go, oh, jeez. And he didn't pitch well. And then he got hurt. And then he was hurt immediately upon the start of, spring training, too. So, it's hard to have a lot of confidence. I mean, that said, I don't think having a lot of confidence has anything to do with how he pitches on the field. Hopefully he's great. The Red Sox obviously need him to be, decent, or at least, a step below league average and healthy would still be acceptable. I would think.
All right.
But
you're on the hot seat. Then I'm going to ask you some really hard questions about him.
Okay.
What does he do tonight? How many runs? How many innings?
I bet he doesn't get out of the fifth and he gives up 4 runs.
Okay. How many strikeouts?
3.
Okay. Now that he just got through that terrible start and his arm didn't fall off, how many more of those starts will he make this season?
I bet he makes 12 starts this year.
And what will his final ERA be on the year? Over or under 4.5?
I'd say just barely over.
Barely over 4.5. And that, my friends, is the guy we traded our top pitching prospect for. And I will give credit where credit is due. Evan Drellick came on the show last week and pointed out to us that contextually that trade made a lot of sense at the time because of the desperation that the Red Sox were in and because they were in the thick of a playoff race. However, my gut reaction at the time they made the trade was this is one of the worst trades I've ever seen. Then I got talked into it by my colleagues because of the context of the trade, and I thought, okay, this could be okay. But then removing yourself from the context of the trade, I'm back to thinking this trade is vomit-worthy.
It's like a lot of Dombrowski's trades, it's kind of sad in a way, I think. So winning the World Series is, I wrote this at BP Boston, I think, after one of the trades. Winning the World Series is the goal, of any baseball team. But I think the goal of any organization is to have sustained success and a real chance to win the World Series over a long period of time. And the Red Sox had that chance to, you know, to build an organization in that way. And Dombrowski has trashed it, you know, with the goal of winning 1 or 2 years. And, you know, there's obviously ways that, you know, that they can recover that depth. You know, they can make smart signings on the free agent market that work out. They can make smart trades
in the international market as well, like Dombrowski pointed out.
Yeah, although that's harder now. I mean, that's part of the thing is that, you know, the Red Sox can't really go out and get a you know, just buy a Yoan Moncada. They're not in the near future really going to be able to draft a guy like Michael Kopech. You know, we've been over this and over this, so I'm sorry to rehash all this. The saving grace is that the Red Sox have a bunch of players like Betts and Bradley and Bogarts and Swihart and Vasquez and Benintendi, all these guys who are young and incredibly talented, and that's a great core to build around. And that's, you know, that's probably the saving grace of Dombrowski, that he hasn't traded any of those guys. So anyway, I remain skeptical of him and his methods, and I think that there were definitely better ways to go about making this team, you know, a good team rather than this sort of brute force that he's exhibited since coming to the Red Sox. And, you know, I've sure been wrong before, so you know, maybe they'll win the World Series this year and next year too, and I'll look like the idiot I am, but I don't know, it's kind of hard to from where I sit right now, it's kind of hard to endorse all this trading of talent for guys who, you know, are going to have this kind of minimal impact on the major league team.
All right. Yeah, I am with you on all of that stuff, and it does make the trades that he makes so much harder. And if they don't work out, it is tough to look at those as anything but a failure.
Yeah.
What I do want to talk about now that's a little bit more fun is how good Chris Sale has been. Yeah, you know, you had to, you started us down the path when you brought up the hit by that terrible catcher. What was his name? Jose Lobaton. And then we just got to talking about Dombrowski, and then I blacked out. So
yeah.
but what I want to ask you about is Chris Sale here, because through two starts he's been unbelievable. And he has been so fun to watch, and pitching is my favorite part about baseball. And I wanted to give you a couple years that Red Sox aces have enjoyed in other championship seasons. And I want to know from you whether or not you think Chris Sale will have a better year than this particular person. So the first guy I'll give you is John Lester. In 2013, John Lester had a 3.75 ERA, 213 innings pitched, and he struck out 177 guys. Will Chris Sale do better than that?
Yes, he will. Although what I would say is Lester really turned it on at the end of the year and in the playoffs, and you know. Shrug emoji. I don't, you know, it's impossible to say how that's going to turn out for Sale. But you know, I think my love of John Lester is well known. I turned on the Cubs ceremony the other day and immediately got sad. But I do think that, you know, it's pretty inarguable that Chris Sale is a better pitcher than John Lester.
Yeah, I agree. I think he'll crush that season. John Lester was unbelievable in the playoffs, like you said. But yeah, I think he's going to be better. We're going to go in the Wayback Machine here to 2007, which is now 10 years ago. I know I don't need to remind you old guys about that. I just turned 30. Who am I mocking? So the Red Sox during 2007 were led by their ace, Josh Beckett. Beckett had a 3.27 ERA. He had 200.2 innings pitched, 8.7 Ks per nine, and he struck out 194 batters. Will Chris Sale be better than Josh Beckett?
Yeah, I think he will be. And I haven't looked up the numbers for the playoffs, but my memory, of Beckett in the playoffs is that he was incredibly good also. So I think, that's always the caveat in any of these, any of these comparisons when you're, I assume you're just talking regular season, right?
Yep. Just regular season numbers.
Okay.
There.
And I'll shut up about the playoffs and say, yes, I think we'll be better than Beckett.
All right, we're going to go to even a step higher. Future Hall of Fame pitcher, future Hall of Losers for his political views, Curt Schilling in 2004, 226.2 innings pitched, a 3.26 ERA, only walked 1.39 guys per nine. He struck out a whopping 203 guys that year. Will he be better or worse than the 50-year-old Curt Schilling? It was not 50 then.
Right. I think he'll be better than Schilling. I don't know if he's going to get those innings. But I think on an inning-to-inning basis, I think he'll be better. But we are approaching probably the upper bounds of how good he's going to be.
All right. Well, we'll see just how good he will be, because the last guy I'll ask you about is – Pedro Martinez, and I'm not going to ask you about his 2004 year, because his 2004 year was really weird, but I will ask you about his 2003 season. In 2003, he had a 2.22 ERA, and he struck out 9.93 guys per nine, only pitched 186.2 innings that year, but he still struck out 206 batters. Will he be better or worse than Pedro in 2003?
I don't think there's – no, he's not going to be better than Pedro. There's your short answer. No.
I don't know. He might be able to have a better year than Pedro's 03. Pedro's 03 was awesome, right? But Pedro was hampered a little bit by longevity that year and his ability to stay healthy. He only made 29 starts that year. I mean, it's not like 29 is nothing, but
right.
It wasn't – that was the start of the decline of Pedro, right?
Yeah, that was the first year. Well, not first year. I mean, his K per nine, started its downward trend at that point. I guess actually 2002 it really started its downward trend compared. But I mean, you're, 99, 2000, 2001, especially 99, 2000. I mean, those were peaks that we haven't seen probably. Won't see for a long time.
We'll never see those again.
So, I mean, he was, he was worth, I don't even know. I don't know what BP has, in terms of warp, but it's probably like 20 warp for those 2 years combined, if not more.
I think it just says unfair next to his name.
Yeah. The thing that's ridiculous is that anybody hit him. Like he actually gave up runs those years. Can you imagine that?
No, I imagine that it was a Jose Lobaton situation where they just closed their eyes and flailed at the ball.
It's gotta be. What did you say? 2003 Pedro?
2003 Pedro. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a different environment for sure, that we're dealing with now. There's a lot more strikeouts. It's a lot easier to generate strikeouts than it was back then. It was a much stronger offensive environment. I mean, we were, getting into the meat of the steroid era there. So I still think that Pedro is going to be, when it's all said and done there, will be better, than Sale. That said, that doesn't mean that, that it's going to be a bad year. I think Sale's going to be fantastic. I mean, we've seen him so far, be fantastic.
Yeah. Not only does it not mean it's going to be a bad year, it's going to be awesome. This is going to be the best pitcher. Well, we're both saying that this is going to be the best pitcher that we've seen since Pedro Martinez in a Red Sox uniform. And I don't think that there's a whole lot of hyperbole going on here when we're saying that. I mean, he was most everybody's pick to win the AL Cy Young here at BP, and that's over not just the local sites here, but all of the sites. You know, it's everybody feels like this guy is going to do something special now that he's got the spotlight on him in Boston, likely going to be pitching in the playoffs if, you know, the great Spanish flu of 2017 goes away at some point. But, yeah, I mean, this is awesome. For people who like aces and like to have appointment viewing every fifth day, you have to be stoked that Chris Sale is on your team, because he is truly a different type of ace than the Red Sox have had in 10 plus years.
Yeah. He is magnificent to watch. You know, and it's the thing that is especially amazing about him is, you know, the way he throws the ball. It's typically like, it's almost like a loogie, you know, like he comes around the side from the left like that. And, you know, lefties typically can't handle that kind of arm angle, but righties typically crush that kind of arm angle. And they can't touch him either. So, I mean, just watching like Cabrera flail at his slider the other day
by like 2 feet.
Yeah. It's pretty nuts. And you know, he's the sad part so far is he's put out, you know, two really good starts, and the Red Sox haven't won either game. So, or did they win the first game?
Did he
pitched against the Tigers or against the Pirates, right? Yeah,
they did win the first game.
Okay,
yeah, so that was the Sandy Leon game, wasn't it? Yes, it was. It was the Sandy Leon game. 12th inning.
He didn't
factor into the decision, but he pitched amazing. That was the Sale Tyon duel. He's been in two duels already. That's been what's awesome too. Has been the other side hasn't disappointed either. Tyon was awesome, and then Verlander was like kind of shaky early on, but then really had a great rest of the start.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I thought the Red Sox actually put some good wood on his pitches and just didn't get anything to show for it. You know, there was a couple times when Pedroia just hit the ball right on the nose. I know Chris Young hit the ball real hard, and you know, it just seemed like, I mean, it's not like the Tigers are known for great defense. It just the balls just seemed to go right to right to the Tigers players. So I imagine that kind of thing is going to change. Those balls will start to fall, and the Red Sox will have more success offensively, and we'll get to watch Chris Sale all year, which is going to be wonderful. Yep. It should be a fun year if they can, not come down with, name your disease here. Stay healthy, guys. Come on.
Absolutely.
Wash your hands.
Yes, wash your hands, and don't touch anybody's dip bottle. I guess the way that I want to end this today is by just asking the simple question: what are you expecting, or what are you going to be watching for over the next 15 or 16 games? They have 15 of those games against AL East opponents. We're going to go through and play the entirety of the division. Tell me one thing that you're going to be watching for as the next month or so of games unfold.
I'm going to be watching for health. I mean, I think a big part of the Red Sox success is going to be just whose name is written on the lineup card before the game starts. You know, if Bradley gets healthy, if this isn't a long-term thing, I mean, of course, the team says it's not and he'll be fine. But they always say that until he's – you know, until they have to put him on the 60-day DL and he has to have a, you know, knee surgery or something. So I think it's just going to be that. I mean, if they can get, you know, their 9 starters into the lineup on a regular basis, if Pomerantz can be healthy, I think he can be, you know, an effective starter. I think that's going to be the big thing is health and getting these guys out there, and if the Red Sox are able to do that, I think they're going to win a lot more than they lose.
My answer for this is going to be a little bit, I guess it sort of ties into your answer too. It's a little bit more even simple than that. I guess I'm just going to be looking for how the lineup ends up shaking out, because we've seen a lot of fluidity in where guys are in the lineup so far over the first month. And I'm looking for guys to kind of carve out roles over the next month. I think you kind of get more of a sense of where guys should be hitting in the lineup over that span of time. So hopefully heading into May and hopefully for sure by June, there's a good sense of where guys should be and what the best alignment for this team is, because it is very different not having Ortiz there. The team has to adjust to life without him. So figuring out how best this offense works without him in the center there, I think is going to be important. But nonetheless, it'll be really fun to see them play some non-National League teams, because that was kind of bizarre opening up against the Pirates this year. But with that, I think we've covered off on everything. Is there anything else you want to add in before we go ahead and do some housekeeping here, Matt?
No, I think the last note I would say is I hope that Craig Kimbrell doesn't kill us all.
Ugh, that guy. He is almost as fun to talk about as Drew Pomeranz.
Well, then let's go to housekeeping.
All right. Yes, please. All right. So if you enjoyed the show today, you can go on to iTunes or Stitcher and subscribe to the show. Please do that and then share it with all of your friends who are Red Sox fans, because that's how our show becomes more popular and more people get to hear me and Matt rant. If you like us individually, you can log on to Twitter and follow Matt at MattyMatty2000. You can follow myself at DevJake. And then please, if you really do like the show or you really hate the show and you want to tell us how much we suck, please log on and rate and review us. We haven't gotten any reviews in like forever, so that would be cool. And yes, we will be with you next week. We are going to have a special guest on. We're going to have Jen McCafferty of Mass Live on, so that will be very exciting. We'll talk to her about the Red Sox, and she's on the beat, so she'll have a lot of interesting things to say, I'm sure. So we'll be back with you then. Until then, enjoy the game and have a good week.